Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Viewers, this is the second episode of the 19th topic. In the previous episode, we began discussing the collection of the Quran in the light of the Quran itself. We had seen how a very distinguished scholar of the subcontinent, Imam Hamiduddin Farahi, had pointed out that in certain verses of Surah Qiyamah, the whole scheme of the collection of the Quran has been pointed out. And he had directed our attention to these verses of Surah Qiyamah. And specifically, the verses were, لا تحرك به لسانك لتعجل به إن علينا جمعه وقرآن فإذا قرأناه فاتبع قرآن ثم إن علينا بيانا. Which mean, O Prophet, do not move your tongue to hastily acquire this Quran. Indeed, upon us it is collection and recital. So when we have recited it, follow this recital. Then upon us is to explain it. We had seen in the previous episode how Farahi actually interprets these verses and tells us that they delineate the whole scheme of the collection of the Quran, in which all the installments of the Quran will be brought together at the end of the revelation of the Quran, and then it shall be given a new sequence, and the Almighty will have it recited in that new sequence, and then the Prophet will be bound to follow that new sequence with its recital. Today we're going to discuss the traditional interpretation or the general interpretation of these verses, and then we shall go on to critically evaluate both this traditional interpretation as well as the one presented by Imam Farahi. Now, as far as the traditional interpretation is concerned, almost all scholars interpret these verses of Surah Qiyamah in the light of an asr of Abdullah ibn Abbas. Thus, for example, Abu Ja'far Tusi in his At-Tibyan. Then we have Ibn Jarir al-Tabri in his Tafsir, Imam Fakhruddin Razi in his Tafsir Kabir, Zamakhshari in his Kashaf, Ibn Kasir in his Tafsir. Almost all these major exegetes of the Quran interpreting these verses of Surah Qiyamah in the light of the Asr or the explanation offered by Abdullah ibn Abbas, which I'm just now going to present before you. Now, this Asr of Abdullah ibn Abbas has been presented in various anthologies of Ahadith, and specifically the one that I'm going to present before you is from Imam Bukhari's Al-Jami' al-Sahih. So this has been narrated by Sayyid ibn Jubair from Abdullah ibn Abbas, and let me just recite these words before you. So it says, "An Sayyid ibn Jubair an ibn Abbas fi qawlihi azza wa jal la tuharrik bihi lisanak qal كان النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم إذا نزل عليه جبريل بالوحي كان مما يحرك به لسانه وشفتيه فيشتد عليه فكان ذلك يعرف منه فأنزل الله تعالى لا تحرك به لسانك لتعجل به أخذه إن علينا جمعه وقرآنه إن علينا أن نجمعه في صدرك وقرآنه فتقرأه فإذا قرأناه فاتبع قرآنه قال أنزلناه فاستمع له إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا بَيَانَ أَن نُبَيِّنَهُ بِلِسَانِكَ فَكَانَ إِذَا أَتَاهُ جِبْرِيلَ أَتْرَكَ فَإِذَا ذَهَبَ قَرَاهُ كَمَا وَعَدَهُ اللَّهُ. So this is how Abdullah ibn Abbas has actually explained each of these verses of Surah Qiyamah actually. In fact, he has given his explanation of how each of these four verses of Surah Qiyamah should be understood. So Ibn Abbas narrates regarding the verse لا تحرك به لسانك, which means do not move your tongue. Of course, he's just started to explain these verses from this particular part of Surah Qiyamah. So it means when Gabriel would descend with a revelation to the Prophet, he would move his lips and tongue, and this would distress him, and his anguish would be apparent from him. يُعْرَفُ مِنْهُ. At this, the Almighty revealed the verse of Surah Qiyamah لا تحرك به لسانك لتعجل به. Now, this is in the next portion of the narrative, Ibn Abbas is going to take up each of these verses and explain how he understands them. So Ibn Abbas explained this and the subsequent verses thus. Do not move your tongue to acquire it. Of course, which is لا تحرك به لسانك. So the first one is إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا جَمْعَهُ وَقُرْآنَ. According to Ibn Abbas, this means إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا أَن نَجْمَعَهُ فِي صَدْرِكْ وَقُرْآنَ فَتَقْرَاهُ. Which means it is upon us, the Almighty is saying, it is upon us to collect it in your heart. Najmarahu fi sadrika, of course, addressing the Prophet, that it is our responsibility to collect the Quran, or this episode, in your heart. And then the next verse, Qur'ana, actually he says it means fatakrahu. So you should read it. or you can read it. And then he goes on to explain the next verse, which is فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ. He says أَنزَلْنَاهُ. قَرَأْنَاهُ means أَنزَلْنَاهُ. فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ فَاسْتَمِعْ لَهُ, which means when we reveal it, you listen to it carefully. So according to him, إِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ would mean إِذَا أَنزَلْنَاهُ فَاسْتَمِعْ لَهُ. Listen to it intently. And then the final verse is إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا بَيَانَ. And he explains this by saying أَنُّبَيِّنَهُ بِلِسَانِكَ. It is the responsibility of the Almighty to explain it through your tongue, O Prophet. And then there are some other narratives actually which explain this أَنُّبَيِّنَهُ بِلِسَانِكَ. That's for example, Imam Bukhari himself in a narrative says, records these words of Ibn Abbas as, while explaining these words of Ibn Abbas as أَنُّبَيِّنَهُ بِلِسَانِكَ, he explains these words by saying ثُمَّ إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا أَن تَقْرَاهُ. So it is our responsibility that you recite it. So, and then the narrative goes on to its completion in the last sentence. Is the Prophet would be silent when Gabriel came and would recite later as promised by the Almighty. So, it was, he would not try to acquire the revelation and then start to reciting it immediately. He would remain silent once these words of assurance and instruction were sounded, and then he would later recite it. So, this in a nutshell is how Ibn Abbas has explained these verses of Surah Qiyamah. And viewers, I would also like to summarize or to present before you Hafiz Ibn Hajar's view, who has actually explained these narratives and the purport and their implications, which actually tell us how Surah Qiyamah verses need to be understood. So he, while explaining this narrative of Abdullah Ibn Abbas, has written certain details in his Fathul Bari, which I am now going to present before you. And Ibn Hajar actually says, وَكَانَ النَّبِيِّ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمُ فِي ابْتِدَاءِ الْأَمْرِ إِذَا لُقِّنَ الْقُرْآنِ نَازَ جِبْرِيلِ الْقِرَاءَةِ وَلَمْ يَصْبِرْ حَتَّى يُتِمَّهَا مُصَارَعَةً إِلَى الْحِفْظِ لِأَلَّا يَنْفَلِتَ مِنْهُ الشَّيْءِ قَالَهُ الْحَسَنُ وَغَيْرُهُ وَوَقَى فِي رِوَايَةٍ لِلْتِرِمْزِي يُحَرِّكْ بِهِ لِسَانَهُ يُرِيدُ أَنْ يَحْفَزَهُ وَلِلنِّسَاءِ يَعْجَلُ بِقِرَاءَتِهِ لِيَحْفَزَهُ ولابن أبي حاتم يتلقى أوله ويحرك به شفتيه خشية أن ينسى أوله قبل أن يفرغ من آخره وفي رواية الطبري عن الشعبي عجل يتكلم به من حبه إياه وكلا الأمرين مراد ولا تنافى بين محبته إياه والشدة التي تلحقه في ذلك فأمر بأن ينصت حتى يقضى إليه وحيه وَبُعِدَ بِأَنَّهُ آمِنٌ مِنْ تَفَلُّتِهِ مِنْهُ بِالنِّسْيَانِ أَوْ غَيْرِهِ وَنَهْوُهُ قَوْلُهُ تَعَالَى وَلَا تَعْجَلْ بِالْقُرْآنِ مِنْ قَبْلِ أَنْ يُقْضَى إِلَيْكَ وَحْيُهُ. So Hafiz ibn Hajar has actually explained, as I said, this narrative from Abdullah ibn Abbas, which is actually the Asr. And he says that in the beginning, when the Prophet would be imparted the Quran, he would try to immediately receive the Quran from Gabriel and would not wait until Gabriel had finished reciting it out to him. This was because he was enthusiastic to preserve it, lest any part of it be lost. This is reported by Al-Hasan and some others. It is mentioned in the narrative recorded by Al-Tirmidhi that he would move his tongue wanting to memorize it. So we have an explanation of why he would actually be very impatient. He wanted to memorize whatever revelation Gabriel had brought down to him. An-Nasai mentions that he would show haste in reading it in order to preserve it. Ibn Abi Hatim records that he acquired the first part of the revelation and would move his lips fearing that he might forget it before he acquires the last part. So again, basically it's the same theme which is going on, that is this is fear of forgetting the revelation that would make him impatient, and he would quickly move his tongue to acquire whatever it was being revealed to him. Now, in a narrative recorded by Tabri from Ash-Shabi, it is mentioned that he would show haste in reading it after Gabriel because of his love for it. So we have another reason here, that it was because of his intense love for revelation that he would quickly move his tongue to acquire the revelation whenever it would descend upon him. And both these reasons are implied, as there is no contradiction between he reading it because of his love for it and the distress he would feel in reading it, at which he was directed to remain silent until all of it has been revealed to him and was assured that he would not lose it from his memory because of forgetfulness or because of any other reason. So he said, according to Ibn Hajar. Both these reasons are implied. The fact that he has been assured that he actually wanted to preserve the revelation, and also he wanted to read it because of its intense love for revelation. Ibn Hajar says that there's no discrepancy between both these reasons. In fact, they are implied at the same time. And the following verse also, then he gives another example. Ibn Hajar goes on to say and say that a similar verse in the Quran is of similar meaning. And the verse is, وَلَا تَعْجِلْ بِالْقُرْآنِ مِنْ قَبْلِ أَنْ يُقْزَى إِلَيْكَ وَحْيُهُ, which means, and be not in haste in acquiring the Quran before its revelation is completed to you. So viewers, we can see that this is how our scholars generally view the interpretation of Abdullah ibn Abbas. They think that these verses of Surah Qiyamah should be interpreted, first of all, in the light of what Abdullah ibn Abbas has said. And in a nutshell, according to Abdullah ibn Abbas, the primary reason for the Prophet showing haste in acquiring the revelation which was being sent down as an episode to the Prophet would be that he might lose it from its memory. So this would make him impatient, and he would quickly move his tongue to acquire that particular episode which was being sent down to him. And then he was assured by the Almighty that he should not do this. He should just intently listen to whatever revelation has been brought down to it. Fastamilahu are the words, and he should later recite it. And that's the assurance that has been sounded. And he should not worry about forgetting the revelation, because the Almighty says, Najma'ahu fi sadrika, that we shall collect it in your heart, and you should not forget it. So we can now have a small comparison as well before we go on and critically analyze the views that we have just presented in the interpretation of Surah Qiyamah verses. We have the view of Imam Farahi, and we have the view of our traditional scholars. Now, our traditional scholars generally think that actually the reason that the Prophet would show haste in a revelation coming down to him would be that he feared that it might get lost. On the other hand, according to Imam Farahi, the primary reason because of which the Prophet acquire this or had this impatience was perhaps also that he had this fear of revelation, but that's a very minor part of it. The major reason for that was that actually he wanted the guidance. He wanted the Quran to be sent down to him in its complete form, so that it should become a source of his guidance. And the key word in which there is a difference in interpretation is the word jam. The word jam, according to our general scholars, would mean that a particular episode should be collected in the heart of the Prophet. As the words I have just recited before you, of the narrative of Abdullah Abbas, say that Najma'ahu fi sadrika, which means that particular episode, God says, I'm going to gather it in your heart. Whereas, according to Imam Farahi, and Jama'ah actually here spells out the fact that the complete scheme of the revelation of the Quran is referred to here, and which would mean that the Quran, the various installments of the Quran which are revealed in various spaces of time and various instances and various phases, they shall all be brought together when the whole revelation has been completed, and then the Almighty will recite it afresh. So you can see that basically Imam Farahi's view is linguistically very correct, because the word jama actually, as we know, means to bring things together. And as we know that, for example, Ibn Sina and Ibn Manzur, while actually pointing out this linguistic meaning, have said jama shay'an tafriqa. Jama shay'an tafriqa would mean that gathering things which are disparate. Similarly, Murtaza Zubaydi in his Tajul Rus, the earlier quotations were from Ibn Sina's Al-Muhkam and from Ibn Manzur's Lisan al-Arab, and then we have Tajul Urus of Mustafa Murtaza Zubaydi saying Taliful Mutafarriq, which means bringing together things which are disparate, which are scattered. So we can see that this particular area in which Farahi has posited his view is very consistent with the linguistic meaning of the word jam. We shall take a look at how our scholars have generally read later on, but for the moment we can see, as far as linguistics is concerned, Farahi's interpretation is very, very true and faithful to the word. And we also know that in the Quran there are several words, several instances in which the word jama has been used in inflections as well in this particular meaning. And obviously, if we take this into account, we can clearly see that the word jama, when it is used in the form of for the meaning of a text, or it's used in reference of a text, it would mean bringing together its various parts. Now, before we go on to further analyze Farahi's interpretation, also there is one question in my mind which does arise in Farahi's interpretation, and although it is not a direct question on his real interpretation or his actual interpretation, which, as I said, pertains to the meaning of the word jam, it actually is a question or an objection, I would say, on his interpretation of the verse which is immediately preceding the words of jam, which is la tuharrik bihi lisanaka, which actually tells us why the Prophet would be impatient on receiving the Quran. So according to Farahi, when he sums up his interpretation, he says that there are two primary reasons for him being impatient. One of the reasons is that he might lose the Quran, he might forget the Quran, which is of course the same as what has been pointed out by our previous scholars. And the second one he is pointed out is that he was impatient so that he could receive the whole of the Quran so that it could become a source of guidance for his people. So Farahi has said that these are the two basic reasons for him being, or the Prophet being impatient in receiving the Quran. In my humble understanding of the Quran, I think that these are two separate issues which have been tackled in two separate verses or two separate instances in the Quran. The assurance sounded on both these, what I mean is in different instances or in different verses. As far as this particular verse is concerned of Surah Qiyamah, it is very likely that it sounds assurance on only one of the things that have been pointed out by Farahi, and that is that he actually was given assurance that he should not be impatient on receiving the whole of the Quran. And this is specifically in the background of the objection of the disbelievers, who would say that why was not the Quran revealed in one go. So actually what I'm trying to point out here is that instead of amalgamating both these reasons as the cause of the Prophet being shown assurance, actually this verse of Surah Qiyamah is actually assuring the Prophet on just one reason, and that is that he should not be impatient in receiving the whole of the Quran. As far as forgetting any part of revelation is concerned, this particular verse does not seem to be sounding assurance to him in here. We have other verses which sound that assurance. Thus, for example, I have already referred to Surah Ala's verse which says Sanuqri'uka fala tansa, which means that we will recite it out to you and then you will not forget it. Sanuqri'uka fala tansa, you will not forget it. So with this distinction, I would say that Farahi's view, of course, is very well grounded. Again, as I said, this question or objection does not arise on his fundamental premise. It only arises on the previous verse in which he has actually given us the cause of why the Prophet was showing impatience. Now, if this distinction is kept in mind, I can go on. And in fact, I would like to go on and corroborate Farahi's view even further when he says that basically one of the reasons that he says why the Prophet was impatient in this regard was that he wanted to receive the whole of the Quran for the guidance of his people. Thus, we have verses like this verse, لَعَلَّكَ بَاخِيٌ نَفْسَكَ أَلَّا يَكُونُوا مُؤْمِنِينَ. So we see the Quran saying, you will perhaps fret yourself to death that they are not embracing faith. So again, this is a very clear clear evidence of the fact that what Farahi is saying is something is very, very likely, and it is one of the it is very clearly expressed here that the Prophet would actually fret himself. He would go to very far distances in order to make his people accept the Quran. He was very, very diligent and vigilant in this matter. Similarly, in Surah Tawbah, we have a verse which says, لَقَدْ جَاءَكُمْ رَسُولٌ مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ عَزِيزٌ عَلَيْهِ مَا عَنِتُّمْ حَرِيصٌ عَلَيْكُمْ بِالْمُؤْمِنِينَ رَؤُوفٌ رَحِيمٌ. Which means, there has now come to you a messenger from amongst yourselves, one who is distressed at your doom, who is greedy for your faith, one who is benevolent and merciful to true believers. And then another verse of Surah Bani Israel, which reads, which actually tells us the wisdom behind why the Quran was actually sent down piecemeal. And the words are وَقُرْآنًا فَرَقْنَاهُ لِتَقْرَأَهُ عَلَى النَّاسِ عَلَى مُكْسٍ وَنَزَّلْنَاهُ تَنْزِيلًا. And we have revealed the Quran in parts so that you can gradually recite it out to people, and we have elaborately and painstakingly revealed it. So this is the reason that this gradual revelation of the Quran is clearly mentioned, that this is why it has been done so, because it could be very appropriate for the instruction and training of the people. And these stages have been laid out themselves, the stages and phases of revelation by the Almighty. So viewers, you can see that with this particular distinction, I would say that Farahi's view is extremely well-founded linguistically as well as from parallel verses of the Quran, in which basically the Prophet would be impatient to receive the whole of the Quran. And this, as Farahi has already pointed out, and I've referred to in my earlier talk, that this particular facet of the Prophet's personality had become a permanent feature. He would be distressed, he would be impatient, he would be worried to receive the revelation. And primarily, it was at one of these instances in Surah Qiyamah that when this impatience surfaced, the Almighty once again assured him, but this time the assurance took the form of delineating the whole scheme of the revelation of the Quran, the way it would be revealed in a gradual manner, and then later on it would be collected. And the Prophet would then be required to actually leave aside the previous recital of the Quran or the previous sequence of the Quran, and he would have to read the Quran or recite the Quran in the new sequence with the new recital. Now, if we take into account one of the parallel verses of the Quran, which I already actually referred to in my previous talk or the previous episode, was وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لَوْلَا نُزِّلَ عَلَيْهِ الْقُرْآنُ جُمْلَةً وَاحِدًا كَذَلِكْ لِنُثَبِّتَ بِهِ فُؤَادَكَ. So this particular verse, viewers, if we take this into consideration, because this is where we can see how the Almighty has replied to the objection of the disbelievers as to why the Quran was not revealed in a single episode. And the words, and this verse actually means, and the disbelievers said, why is not the Quran revealed to him in one go? Thus shall we reveal it piecemeal to strengthen your heart. So kazalik actually refers to the fact that the Quran shall be revealed in this piecemeal manner so that it can strengthen the heart of the Prophet. So if this particular kazalika, which is a very, very subtle word used here and very eloquently used by the Quran, is taken into account, then I think that the Surah Qiyamah verses, the way they assure the Prophet, there is a small ellipsis which actually tells us that, which is actually found between لَا تُحَرِّكْ بِهِ لِسَانَكَ لِتَعْجَلَ بِهِ, and then the next verse, إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا جَمْعَهُ وَقُرْآنَهُ. So between these two verses is juxtaposed a sentence of assurance which has been suppressed by the Quran. But if we keep in view this parallel verse which I've just recited before you, and the fact that the other parallel verses tell us that this piecemeal revelation of the Quran had a certain wisdom behind it, so if we unfold that particular sentence of assurance or another sentence which connects the two words or the two verses, so لَا تُحَرِّكْ بِهِ لِسَانَكَ is the first one, and the next one is إِنَّ عَلَيْنَا جَمْعَهُ وَقُرْآنَ. In between these two verses, viewers, I think there is a verse of assurance which has been suppressed to the effect, words to the effect, and one of it would be kazalika, again that same kazalika which I had just referred to, kazalika anzalnahu fa iza quziya wahyuhu inna alayna jama'ahu wa qur'ana. So it would mean that, O Prophet, do not hastily move your tongue to acquire the Quran. Kazalika anzalnahu, we shall reveal it thus in piecemeal. Fa iza quziya wahyuhu, so as soon as the whole of the revelation is complete. And then you can see that this sentence beautifully dovetails into the next sentence, which is Inna alayna jam'ahu wa Qur'an. As soon as its revelation is complete, it is upon us, the Almighty says, to collect all its part and Inna alayna jam'ahu wa Qur'an, to collect it and to recite it out to you. So this is how, in fact, I would see Farahi's interpretation beautifully describing the whole arrangement and the whole scheme of revelation of the Qur'an. And I would now go on to critically evaluate the not only the text of the narrative of Abdullah ibn Abbas, which I just read out before in the beginning, but also its chain of narration, and then see how they stand to the test of criticism. Now, my first critique on Abdullah ibn Abbas's narrative is that the word jam is not appropriately used the way it has been interpreted, although I would not say it's absolutely wrong to interpret the word jama in the meaning of memorization, as Ibn Abbas seems to imply. But the word jama is used for memorization in the presence of some concomitant indication. Otherwise, in the absence of any qarina or any concomitant indication or factor, more appropriate words which point to the fact that something is to be memorized, and the more appropriate words for this particular act in Arabic language are, for example, qara or hafiza or sabata. So, if the issue, as the narrative says, was that no part of the revelation would be lost, and the Almighty will have it collected in the heart of the Prophet, as you remember, the narrative said, "An najma'u fi sadrika," that we shall collect it in your heart, then more appropriate words instead of jama were sabata or qara'a or hafiza, which actually specifically connote memorization. But the word jama only connotes memorization in the presence of certain qara'a, as I would say, or concomitant factors, which are absent here. Moreover, there is no concomitant textual indication for the words fi sadrika within the text of the Quran. In the absence of such an indication, these words cannot be understood as an insinuation. So this is the first critique which arises in my mind on the asar or the narrative of Abdullah ibn Abbas. Now, the second critique, which arises in my mind, is if you recall that he had said that inna alayna jam'ahu wa qur'ana actually means an najma'u fi sadrika wa qur'ana. The word qur'ana actually means fattaqrahu. So inna alayna jam'ahu would mean it is upon us to collect it in your heart. Wa qur'ana actually means fattaqrahu, that you recite it. So I would say that this is not a very accurate translation, because Qur'ana actually also relates to inna alayna. So actually this verse actually means is that inna alayna jam'ahu wa inna alayna qur'anahu. It is upon us to collect it and it is upon us to read it out. So both these verbs are actually ascribed to the Almighty Himself. However, the way Ibn Abbas explains it, the second part, wa qur'anahu, actually relates to the Prophet. He says that the Qur'an means fatakrahu, you should read it, so that you should read it. As I said, this is not appropriate at all, because in the verse it is very clear that inna alayna jam'aha wa Qur'ana is actually both clearly ascribed to the Almighty, and the meaning would be that it is inna alayna jam'ahu, it is upon us to collect it, or inna alayna Qur'anahu, it is upon us to recite it. Now, the third critique which arises in my mind vis-a-vis Abdullah ibn Abbas' interpretation is that فَإِذَا قُرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ. Remember, this is the third verse. He says that actually this means أَنْزَلْنَاهُ فَاسْتَمِعْ لَهُ. He has interpreted it, which means when we reveal it, you listen intently to it. Now, it clearly seems that this part of this interpretation has been made by connecting it to the verse which is prior to this verse, and that is La tuharrik bihi lisanaka, because actually what is meant is that when Gabriel recites out the revelation to the Prophet, he should not move the tongue to acquire it in haste. But the sequence, to me, viewers, it seems that this particular verse, Iza qara'nahu, does not relate to La tuharrik bihi lisanaka. You see, La tuharrik bihi lisanaka is an assurance sounded to the Prophet. According to Ibn Abbas asr or narrative, the part فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ, the way it has been explained as أَنْزَلْنَاهُ فَاسْتَمِعْ لَهُ, relates أَنْزَلْنَاهُ فَاسْتَمِعْ لَهُ to لَا تُحَرِّكْ بِهِ لِسَانَكَ. So just see the connection, that do not move your tongue when we recite it to you, when we reveal it to you, فَاسْتَمِعْ لَهُ, listen to it intently. However, viewers, you can clearly see that this part فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ cannot relate to La Tuharrik Bihi Lisanaka, because it is clearly so closely related to the previous verse, which is Inna Alayna Jam'ahu Wa Qur'ana. And you can see how the word Qur'anahu is repeated. فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ. So the actual sequence is Inna Alayna Jam'ahu Wa Qur'ana. It is upon us to collect it and then to recite it out. فَإِذَا قَرَأْنَاهُ. So when we recite it out, فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَ. follow that recital. So I would say that, again, this is a question that arises, that why has Ibn Abbas actually ascribed this or related this verse to Latu Harrik Bihi Lisanaka, whereas it is clearly, very clearly related to the verse previous to it, and the repetition of the word Qur'ana is the clear evidence of the sign that this is the connection between the two, that we shall recite it, and when we have recited it, so
Qur'anahu fa iza qara'nahu, Qur'anahu fa iza qara'nahu.
They are so closely connected that we cannot relate faiza qara'nahu to la tuharrik bihi lisanaka, as this narrative seems to suggest. The fourth question, viewers, that arises in my mind in this regard is that, if you remember, I've just also referred it to just now, that according to Ibn Abbas, fattabi qur'ana, or it refers, means fastami lahu, listen intently to it. Again, this is not a very inappropriate translation. When you say fattabi qur'ana, a literal translation would be follow this recital. Fastami lahu would mean listen intently to it. I would say this is a very far-fetched or a little or an explanation which actually exceeds the words. It goes beyond the literal words fattabi qur'ana, to making it mean as fastami lahu is something which the words do not accept, at least in my mind. Now, as far as the fifth question, viewers, that arises in my mind is that as far the last words is inna alayna bayanahu, and if you recall, it was explained by Ibn Abbas as annubayyinahu bilisanika, which was further explained as inna alayna an taqra'ahu. Remember, I said that narrative in Bukhari has actually told us that nubayyinahu bilisanika means an taqra'ahu, inna alayna an taqra'ahu. Now, if this is the case, then there would be a repetition, because according to Ibn Abbas, an taqra'ahu has already been referred to earlier by the very first verse, which is inna alayna jam'ahu fa qur'ana. An taqra'ahu qur'anahu has been interpreted as taqra'ahu. So if here is the case, explaining inna alayna bayanahu by telling us that it means inna alayna an taqra'ahu, it would only be a repetition, because taqra'ahu has already come before while explaining Qur'anahu. So it has already been there. So inna alayna an taqra'ahu, it is our responsibility that you recite it. And earlier on also the same word had occurred. So this would be a mere repetition. And hence I would say that this is again something of a questionable nature. So these are the five questions which arise in my mind vis-a-vis the interpretation of Abdullah ibn Abbas. We have yet to see whether it's correctly ascribed to him or not. Whereas, viewers, on the other hand, we can see that each and every word of this narrative, the way it has been explained by Imam Farai, it really is something which is very linguistically, it's something which is linguistically possible, not only possible, but it feels that it is very, the linguistics of this, or the stylistics of this verse are absolutely, speak of for themselves regarding the interpretation, or in favor of the interpretation of Imam Farai. I have already commented on the word jam', that when it is used, as pointed out by Imam Farahi, in the conventional meaning, in the Arabiya Mubin of the Quran, it means to bring together parts. And when it is used in the with regard to a text, it can only mean that its various parts are brought together. True that we have the word jam' used in various ahadith as in the meaning of memorization. We see that there are certain instances in which the word jama' can connote memorization. For example, we have a narrative which says that the first people who would be called upon first on the day of judgment would be people who had jumi' al-Quran, who had collected the Quran in their hearts. Of course, to hear it means. So here particularly we have the word jama' being used for memorization. But again, as I said, there has to be some qareena or a concomitant indication which makes it in this particular meaning. In the absence of any concomitant indication or factor, the word has to be used in its original meaning of bringing things together in a whole, in a unified whole. Now, similarly, the word inna alayna jam'ahu wa Qur'an also becomes very, 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 very meaningful, because inna alayna jam'ahu wa Qur'ana would actually mean inna alayna jam'ahu wa inna alayna Qur'anahu. So if the word Qur'ana refers to the recital of the Qur'an by the Almighty in its final sequence, which was actually given or made by Gabriel, then of course this becomes even more meaningful, that The Almighty says that we shall collect it and then we shall recite it out to you as well, so that everything is taken care of. Similarly, Fattabi Qur'ana, the way Farai has interpreted it, that the Almighty is actually directing the Prophet that he must follow this new recital, this new arrangement with this new recital. The Fattabi means to follow it. So again, Fattabi Qur'ana is another thing which is very, very clearly explained if we follow Farai's interpretation. And finally, his Tabyeen verse interpretation, of which I've already given an example or two examples in my previous episode, they also stand very clearly when we see that there are so many verses which have come in fulfillment of this promise. The promise was Inna alayna bayana, summa inna alayna bayana, that we, when we are collecting the Quran, the Almighty is saying that if anything requires explanation, we shall provide it. So these Tabyeen verses, which are found in the Quran in various places, these verses tell us that the Almighty has actually fulfilled his promise, but that whenever a question arose, whenever something needed to be explained further, that was explained later on and then placed right at the end of a particular directive. And these generic verses would then be placed there as kazalika yubayyinullah, which means this is the way how God explains in accordance with the promise that he has made in Surah Qiyamah. So viewers, this is as far as the critique on the text of the narrative of Ibn Abbas is concerned. Now we have another critique as well, and this time on the matn, on the isnad, or the chain of narration of the narrative of Abdullah ibn Abbas. You can see, viewers, the chart of this narrative being displayed before you. It's a rather comprehensive chart, and you can see that it is the only person to report this narrative is Abdullah ibn Abbas, and the only person to report this narrative from Abdullah ibn Abbas is Sayyid ibn Jubair. Now, this the critique that I am now going to present before you vis-a-vis this narrative is by Shabbir Ahmad Azhar Merati, a very famous scholar of the subcontinent again. And he, in his Sahih Bukhari Ka Mutala, a book that he has written on a critical appraisal of some narratives of Imam Bukhari, he says that this narrative, according to him, is incorrectly ascribed to Ibn Abbas. He has actually pointed out certain other details which very, very convincingly show us that, according to him, is incorrectly ascribed to Ibn Abbas. And this is how he has actually explained it. He says that there are many narratives in Hadith literature in which Sayyid ibn Jubair directly heard from Abdullah ibn Abbas. Remember, this narrative is Abdullah ibn Abbas. From him, the person reports is Sayyid ibn Jubair. So Merati says that there are several narratives in the corpus of Hadith literature in which Sayyid ibn Jubair reports from directly from Abdullah ibn Abbas, or indirectly. He says that there are both types of narratives. There are narratives in which he has directly heard from him, and there are narratives which he has indirectly heard from him through some other person. So he says that as far as the first category of narratives are concerned, in which he has directly heard from Abdullah ibn Abbas, generally, he says the words used are Haddasani ibn Abbas, which would mean Ibn Abbas narrated to me, or Samirtu ibn Abbas, which means I heard from Ibn Abbas, or Akhbarani ibn Abbas, that Ibn Abbas informed me. So he says the narratives in which there is no person in between Sayyid ibn Jubair and Abdullah ibn Abbas, this is how they report. So either we have a Haddasani or an Akhbarani or a Samirtu. Then he says that there are other narratives in which he reports from some other person who reports from Abdullah ibn Abbas. And when this is the case, he either mentions that person, the name of that person, or there is an anana in the narrative and he just says an. And as an example, he says, he would say, Haddasani Mujahid an ibn Abbas, that Mujahid narrated to me from ibn Abbas. Or Haddasani Ikrama an ibn Abbas, that Ikrama narrated to me from ibn Abbas. And as the other option is that he would not name any person at all, and he would just say An ibn Abbas. So this, when he would say An ibn Abbas, this would obviously mean that there is some person in between him and Abdullah ibn Abbas. Now, viewers, lo and behold, if we collate all the narratives, without any exception, we find the anana of Sayyid ibn Jubair existing here. In all these narratives, he actually has not specified anything in this regard, and we have an anana And we find narratives which say an Ibn Abbas, which clearly tells us that actually he heard this, he did not hear this narrative directly from Ibn Abbas, and there was some person between him and Abdullah ibn Abbas, which was the person who connected the two, and which in other words tells us that at least in the case of this narrative is a case of inqita, and Abdullah ibn Abbas, Sayyid ibn Jubair, could not have heard this narrative from Abdullah ibn Abbas.
Another problem with this narrative is that some variants, like Bukhari and a Muslim, both these variants, reported by Abu Awana Wadda ibn Abdullah Yashkuri from Musa ibn Abi Aisha, mentioned that Ibn Abbas told Sayyid ibn Jubair that he would move his lips the way Prophet moved his lips, giving the impression that he witnessed the Prophet moving his lips when these verses were revealed. So the words are, فَقَالَ لِي ابْنُ عَبَّاسِ أَنَا أُحَرِّكُهُمَا كَمَا كَانَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ يُحَرِّكُهُمَا. Now, a variant recorded by Abu Nuaym thus pinpointedly says, قَالَ ابْنُ عَبَّاسِ إِنَّمَا أُحَرِّكُ شَفَتَيَّ كَمَا رَأَيْتُ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ وَسَلَّمْ يُحَرِّكُ شَفَتَهُ. So, Ibn Abbas said, I moved my lips the way I saw God's messenger move his lips. Now, it is known that Ibn Abbas was not even born at the time of revelation of Surah Qiyamah. In fact, he was only a few years old at the time of Hijrah.
So, viewers, this is how I would see that, Abdullah, that as far as this narrative is concerned, it has these flaws, that we see that the narrative itself is questionable because Abdullah ibn Abbas would not have been present at the time of the revelation of these verses, and the way he is actually described his explanation also brings questions to our mind. And the other fact is that the narrative is broken between him and Sayyid ibn Jubair is also a testimony to the fact that this narrative is munqata. So I would say that not only the questions which arise on the text of the narrative of Abdullah ibn Abbas, but also the ones which arise on its chain of narration are sufficient to raise this very serious question that this narrative cannot be accepted as an explanation of these verses of Surah Qiyamah. On the other hand, we can see that if the explanation of Imam Farahi is accepted or interpreted, although we have a certain question, and at least I had a certain question regarding his interpretation, but that does not relate directly to the interpretation per se, but to one of the previous verses, which links that particular verse to the previous verse. So barring that small exception, Farahi's interpretation of this verse actually is tantamount to shedding new light on the whole issue of the collection of the Quran. And as per this view, it would seem that the Almighty had actually informed the Prophet and through him the companions about the scheme of the revelation of the Quran. And he had informed it in a Meccan surah much before the Quran would have been completed later on in the Medinan period. In the Meccan surah, in this Meccan surah of Surah Qiyamah, he had actually told the Prophet that he should not be worried about receiving the whole of the Quran, because the scheme of the Almighty is that he is going to gradually reveal it step by step, piecemeal, in stages. And then the scheme is that the Almighty himself says that it is my responsibility to bring together these various installments and episodes of the Quran in a unified whole. And not only that, the Almighty says, Inna alayna jam'ahu wa Qur'ana, then I'll recite it out to you. The new arrangement with its recital will be given to the Prophet. And then فَإِذَا قُرَأْنَاهُ فَاتَّبِعْ قُرْآنَهُ. The Almighty says that when I give this new arrangement to you, then you, a Prophet, it is your responsibility to leave the previous recital and its arrangement and follow this new recital, a new recital or a new arrangement of the recital which the Almighty shall hand over to him. Again, as the words say, that this will be in the oral form, because the word used is qarar. So, viewers, this brings me to an end to this episode. And since the Quran is actually has just stopped here by telling us that the scheme of the Almighty is that all the various installments and episodes of the Quran revealed in various instances shall be brought together. But the question remains is that this bringing together, what is the nature of this bringing together? Is it in writing or in memory or in some other pieces of surfaces on which writing can be done? etc. So this is a question that primarily relates to history. And so the next episode we shall take up how historically we can see that this promise of the Quran or these verses, the way they have told us that the Quran shall be brought together in a unified whole, how does history tell us that it was brought together in a single unified whole? So until then, أقول قولي هذا واستغفر الله لي ولكم ولسائر المسلمين والمسلمات.